Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, YouTube, or now on band.video, thanks for checking us out. We certainly do appreciate it. We know you have a lot of choices out there. This is the first time I'm doing the monologue episode as a video. So let's see what happens. I guess time to put pants on, right? Since the camera's rolling. But I can't do this show without the amazing and continued support of our sponsors. I've been talking about them for, since the show started, and I really have developed a nice relationship with the companies that have become a part of the show. And some of the newer ones are True Hemp Science. They are based in Austin, Texas. It's a small business. They're making some of the best hemp-based CBD out there. They sent me a bottle of number 41 and also number 19. I've been taking that for a while. Shoulder issue is gone. I am so grateful for them or for their product. I think that, when it comes to CBDs, there's a lot of products out there. I don't have the background. I don't understand the science of it all. I don't know why one is better than the other, but I do know this. I've tried a bunch, and the one that works the best so far has been True Hemp Science. And really, all I needed it to do is make my shoulder stop hurting, and that's what it has accomplished. So if you are in the market for some CBDs, my suggestion, go to truehempscience.com/macroaggressions. And what you can do is just read up about it. That's all. See why what they're doing is different. See why using hemp is the way to go, and see what technique they're using to make their products better. It's a small business. We love them. They've been great and helpful for the show. So if you are interested and in the market, use the promo code MACRO on your way out to save yourself a little bit of money. Also to Helin951. This is the company that sends me the drinks that don't taste particularly great, but work really well. And the reason why they don't taste so great is because they didn't want to compromise the potential. They didn't want to have a potential compromise of adding products to it to make the taste better, but doing something to the potency of the product. So it's a fermented soy beverage, which sounds disgusting, but it is really good for you. And the soybeans that they use are very different from the soybeans that we get here. I needed an education on this. I needed to understand why what they're doing is so much different from what we're experiencing here. God knows I've been bagging on the soy boy culture and all of that and the man boobs and all that stuff for a while now, and rightly so, because it's an epidemic. So what's the difference? What is Helin 951 doing that's different than the other companies that are out there making soy? Well, they're doing a lot different, actually. first and foremost, they're getting their soybeans from Mongolia. It's a totally different region. They're grown differently. They're not GMO. They don't use pesticides. They have a very different process for growing. The soil's different. The soil here in America is garbage. I mean, we treat it poorly. We get poor nutrition from our food, and then we all act surprised why it's all gone wrong. It's gone wrong because of our farming methods, of course. So part of what Helin 951 is doing is they're using better products. They're using non-GMO. They have a there's a fermentation process that happens with their products. It's much different. And so what you wind up having is a drink that doesn't have pesticides, doesn't have GMOs or any of these things at its core. And the people that have been using this stuff for a while are the people that have been having issues with cancer. Now, I'm not trying to make any sort of claims or representations about that. I'm just saying that the people that have found this product all have that in common. And so they've been using that to make themselves feel better. And I'm obviously tiptoeing around these landmines of things that you can and can't say. So I'm not going to say something I can't prove or back up or anything like that. I will say this. Go to the website and read up about it, watch the videos that they have, and then you make up your mind. Simple, right? Helin 951, it's pronounced Helin. It's spelled differently. HAELAN951.com/macro. They built a page for us. They've got videos. They've got a lot of information. Read through it. See if you think it's a fit for you. If it is, use the promo code macro on the way out to save yourself some money. So, well, like I said, band.video, we are on there. We have such a huge audience there. I mean, there's the potential for a huge audience. We put a couple videos up already and they've been, let's just say, well received. You know, it's like it used to be when YouTube weren't a bunch of agenda-driven maniacs. You know, where they're now ratio, you know, they're putting you in the you like walk into Walmart, you know, if YouTube was Walmart, you walk into Walmart, they've taken all of our topics and they've put them way, way in the back. They put us out in the gardening section, you know, where you have to go on the door and you go outside and nobody goes out there. That's where the conspiracy alternative media stuff is. So they've banished us there. But thanks to Alex and Rob and the team over at band.video that have given me the opportunity to at least plant my flag there with them and get my information out in front of a brand new audience. So if you're watching this on Band and you are unfamiliar with who I am, well, get familiar. What's your fucking problem? Get familiar. Macroaggressions. I've been around this. I'm almost on my 200th episode. So, been there for a couple years. I've been writing books. I'm a number one best-selling author. I wrote The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire with Jeff Berwick. I wrote The Octopus of Global Control, and I also wrote my new book. And since we're doing this on video, I can show it. Hypocrisy, Surviving in a World of Cultural Double Standards. Put old Uncle Sam on the cover in a straight jacket. Because that's where we are these days. So, look, let's get into it. We're going to talk about something that a lot of people say is fake. I'm not talking about space. We all know the space is fake. And gay, apparently, too. But what I'm actually talking about is something that is very real. And that's the depopulation agenda and the eugenics component to that. Now, for a lot of people don't know, I mean, I'm assuming a lot of people don't know much about eugenics. It's not exactly dinner table type conversation material. I mean, you're talking about a concept in which the people that are in positions of power decide that they are somehow above everybody else and that they're their sort of breed or their stock is the good stock and everybody else's is the bad stock. And the problem with this planet is that there's too many people from the bad stock taking up space on it, right? So that's kind of how they envision this That's how they view the rest of the world. They are at the top, everyone's at the bottom, and this world would work a whole lot better if it wasn't for all these fucking people. Especially dumb people, and ugly people, and people with misshapen skulls, and things like that. And so they have come up with this concept called eugenics. And it's at its core, it's anchored in science, or at least that's the cover story, is that it's anchored in science. When you dig into it, though, what you'll find is that there's not a whole lot of science. It's not real sciencey. It's more conceptual. It's how they view the world and their desire to get rid of all of the lesser than people, and then using science as the justification to make that happen. You know, they'll say, well, it's not us, it's science. Trust the science. Where the fuck have we heard that before? Trust the science. Any attack on me, quite frankly, is an attack on science. Whatever. But the concept of eugenics was put into the history books because of a guy named Sir Francis Galton. Now, I'm not... history books are one thing. I don't pretend that this concept hasn't been around for a long, long time. I'm sure it has. I don't think Sir Francis Galton is the first narcissistic psychopath to come up with the concept of killing everybody, except for him and his family. This mentality is pervasive through the elite of societies. They just feel like everything would work better if there was fewer people on this planet, because they consider the people that they don't see or interact with, or the people that are down on their luck living on $1 a day or $2 a day, they don't consider those people to be productive members of society. They don't see them as doing anything other than being a parasite or a drag on humanity, and they feel like they should be eliminated. The irony in this whole thing is that it's actually reversed. You understand? These people are the problem with society. The poor guy on the street corner that has no money, that's begging for food, I have a ton of compassion for that guy. I don't know his story. Maybe he was born into that. Maybe he made poor decisions and that's his life. I don't know. Not my place to judge him, and I don't know. But I don't want him dead, because it wouldn't improve my life if that guy wasn't on this planet anymore. And it wouldn't improve their lives, these people in the castles, you know, on the high on the hill. It's not going to improve their life necessarily. They just think that if you thin the herd, then you improve the stock. And maybe if we're talking about actual herd animals, maybe there is something to that. But we're not. We're talking about, and to be fair, maybe that's not fair to thin the herd like that if you've got a ranch with sick animals and you get, I don't know. I'm not going to break down Animal Farm here, okay? But I'm just saying that the idea that some people up at the top get to make a decision about some people down at the bottom, whether or not they're taking up too much air on their planet, it's not their place to make that decision. Everyone was born onto this planet for whatever reason. Everybody's got a responsibility and a role in this planet. We're doing something. We're all doing different stuff. So my point is that Sir Francis Galton, who is Darwin's cousin, by the way, I'm sure everybody's shocked about that, that he coined the phrase eugenics in 1883. And he talks about that. He talks about the concept of selected breeding. I mean, now you're really getting into animal farm when you start talking about the concept of selective breeding, of the educated, of the healthy, of the wealthy, of the high class people. You know, selective breeding, we're going to breed in these traits. Think of it like dogs, right? Championship type dogs, championship horses, horses that run in the Kentucky Derby. What do? After Secretariat wins the Kentucky Derby, they go jerk him off a bunch, collect all his sperm, and then sell it because they say, well, this is coming from good stock, and we're going to take this horse cum and sell it all over the place, man. We're going to make $1 bazillion. And they do. And the reason why they do is because they can say, hey, listen, you want to get your horse impregnated by just any old horse, or do you want to get it by the one that won the Kentucky Derby? This is of great stock, right? So this is where they come from this world. So it shouldn't be surprising that they have this mentality. Now, to be crystal clear, I'm not excusing their paranoid delusions or anything like that. I'm just saying I understand where it could be coming from. And let's talk about this. Let's talk about what eugenics is all about. Because it's a combination of things. It's not just depopulation. It is, when you've got to sell, when you've got, you know, the big lie that Goebbels talks about, you know, you tell the big lie and everything. Well, when you tell the big lie, you got to bring in a bunch of horseshit to back it up, right? You're going to call in everything. So with eugenics, in their attempt to try and normalize it and rationalize their ideas for mass murder, they do so under the guise of science. Okay. And they bring in a variety of sciences. So you've got obviously genetics and biology. This is a huge component of it, but it's not limited to that. You've got psychology. The psychology component of this, they bring in psychologists to say, oh, yes, yes. I mean, these people are clearly not going to have a quality life. They can't even comprehend the mysteries of the universe. We should definitely euthanize them immediately. They're morons and things like that. You know, so you bring in that psychology component. There's anthropology. Remember when all these crazy people are out going around the globe measuring people's skulls and noses? Like in Tibet, it's like, hey, come here. Let me see you for a second. You over there herding yaks. I want to measure your nose to see if you're an inferior race, you know? So this was going on in like the 20s and 30s and things like that, when they were in this big scientific push to try to rationalize the concepts of like a master race, which is fucking wild. But it's not limited to these sorts of sciences. They bring in statistics, a lot of statistics. They're going to, you know, as they say, you can dazzle them with facts or baffle them with bullshit. So when you can't dazzle them with facts, you baffle them with statistical bullshit, which there's a lot of. And so this is when you start getting into, well, the master race's noses are typically this many millimeters long, or, you know what I mean? And stuff like that. And you start to show with statistical certainty that this group is inferior and this group is superior to the others. And that's why we have to reorganize society. So they'll use whatever tactics they can. Sociology is deeply involved in this. Just medicine in general. Religion plays a part in eugenics as well. We're talking about education levels, right? Good stock, bad stock, well-educated, you know, sort of uneducated, which reminds me of the Mark Twain quote about the media. If you don't read the papers, you're uninformed. And if you do read the papers, you're misinformed. So there's a big push that, you know, trying to tie eugenics to education, or maybe it's IQ, things like that. You've got, geography. Geography plays a role in this too. Oh, well, you know, those people from Africa, blah, 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 you know? So they do that. And then history. History is dragged into the eugenics discussion all the time. So let's talk about a little bit more about what's going on. This is scientific racism. And let's just call it what it is. It's using science, statistics, all these things I just mentioned, biology, anthropology, statistics, mathematics, education level, all this stuff to justify racism, to justify discrimination against a person because of the way they look or their health or the way they act or where they're from or what their history says or who their people are or whatever. These people that we're talking about, the concept of selective breeding, what they're also talking about is trying is the while selective breeding of the good stock is happening, they're also trying to discourage reproduction of the sick, poor, and dumb. And so they use this sort of scientific racism to justify unspeakable things like slavery. And they said, well, listen, these people are just inferior. They're three-fifths human beings, even in America, when they were being, when they were finally freed. And they said, well, you know, they're not even really human. And you may think that that's ancient history, and maybe it is, but my mom lived in the South during a time when there were colored water fountains. So it's not that long ago. But America got into the action in 1896 in Connecticut. And that was when they passed a law. Now, this might sound like kind of a funny one, but I think you see where it's going. It's kind of a slippery slope. But they passed a law banning people with epilepsy from getting married. Like, why epilepsy of all the things? I don't know. But apparently in Connecticut, somebody had a huge problem with the epileptics getting married. You know? So I don't... I don't know what that was. Maybe that was just, maybe they felt like they could tie that to some medical condition and thus make the case for it. But it didn't stop there, of course, because that was just how you get your toe in. You know, that's how you get your foot in the door, is with, well, we're going to ban epileptics from getting married. Because then it progressed to the next stage, which was anyone with feeble minds. Holy shit. I mean, 90% of America would be banned from getting married if it was just feeble minds. I mean, so nobody would be getting married, or very few people would be getting married. I know a lot of people that would not be getting married. Let me just say that. Their minds are very feeble, whatever that means. But you can understand how this becomes a slippery slope. And I think you can put that in context of what we're going through right now with regard to the vaccine passports and all of that stuff too, and the vaccination shots and everything, because it's always a little thing that gets you and it's like, ah, we're just banning epileptics. And you're like, they don't care, or they don't matter. And then it's the feeble-minded, and then it's the Jews, and then it's the Catholics, and then it's, you know what I mean? It's increasingly easier to ban the next group of people after you've set the precedent by banning the first group. So you always have to be a bit careful of what you're doing, even if it seems like inconsequential or insignificant at the time, some little thing, just recognize that it sets the precedent for, if that can happen, then maybe just a little bit more. And then we get into the David Icke totalitarian tiptoe situation, where you understand how you go from A to Z. Not all at once, but in these small little moves. First they came for the epileptics, then they came for the unvaccinated. You know what I mean? It's that sort of mentality. So, but God, could you imagine, what would that do to the marriage industry here? Wouldn't be Say Yes to the Dress on TLC. It'd be no Randy to the Rescue in America, man. It'd just be a bunch of dumb, feeble-minded, unmarried folk. And that's kind of, you know, and that obviously is kind of cartoonish. And so, oh, you're not going to allow people to get married for whatever reason? that's not the worst thing in the world, right? Well, no, but it's not their position. It's not their mandate to make decisions like that for you. Like, the government shouldn't be stepping in and making these decisions. But again, when you let the government run unchecked, they start coming up with all kinds of crazy new ideas. So in America, they then transitioned from that. And I don't know if it was necessarily the Connecticut lawsuit, you know, banning epileptics from getting married or anything like that. But it wasn't too far after, it wasn't too long after that, that in America, forced sterilization started. So if you can see how that slippery slope goes, where you're like, well, it's just marriage. And then next thing you know, it's forced sterilization. And not just a little bit either, like a lot, like 20,000 people that were in mental institutions from 1909 to 1979 were sterilized. So you're talking about a 70-year period, 20,000 people. That's a lot of people, but it's also, a 70-year timeline, you know, it's a long, so 20,000 people over 70 years, but that's just the mental institutions. Another 60,000 Americans were forcibly sterilized as well during that time frame for other reasons that weren't in mental institutions. Even the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that forced sterilization doesn't violate the Constitution. That kind of threw me in, you know, that the Supreme Court didn't even see how crazy this is. But then again, let's be honest, we just had Justice Sotomayor confirm to the world that she is a COVIDiot of the highest proportions and knows nothing about what's currently happening. She exposed that she watches MSNBC, probably on a continuous loop, because the information that she had was so out of touch with reality that it was, I think it could be more accurately described as dangerous information that she had. Not dangerous to have these thoughts, but dangerous to have these thoughts and be on the Supreme Court, where you can make actual decisions that really impact people, and you could be making those decisions based off of garbage, garbage in, garbage out, that sort of thing when it comes to computer programming. Well, if the information in is MSNBC, and then the export out from your Supreme Court are decisions based on the information that came in, I'm just saying, don't expect good things to come from the Supreme Court. And when you realize that they took a look at this and they said, forced sterilization, un-American? No, it's not. We're all right with it. So there's that. In 1976, the General Accounting Office of the United States reported that between 25% and 50% of Native Americans had been sterilized. I mean, we're just such fuckers. Not us, obviously. You know what I mean? The government. But this mentality. Somebody makes the decisions on this. A human being, presumably. I mean, we might need to get Ike in here. We can have the conversation. But presumably, it's a human being that's making the decisions. And then other human beings go out and enforce this and go and do this. Just, I can't wrap my mind around the person that is like, well, honey, I'm going to go to work today. What are you doing? Oh, I'm going to forcibly sterilize a bunch of Indians. Do they want to be sterilized? They don't know they're getting sterilized. But they are. So we've done that to half the population of the Indians, to anywhere from 25% to 50%. It's reprehensible, man. That's just that's some straight up Nazi shit. And in fact, the Nazis did that to 400,000 people. They just forcibly sterilized them. So eugenics is real. Eugenics is part of this. Forcible sterilization is part of eugenics. These things are not conspiracy theories. I mean, they're conspiracies, to be sure, But there's nothing theoretical about this. This is actually happening. It has been happening. It's documented. Not only is it documented, you've got people going out and talking about it like it's a good thing. Margaret Sanger. Do you know, you're familiar with who Margaret Sanger is? She was the founder of Planned Parenthood. She's a horrible racist, a reprehensible piece of shit. She used to give speeches at KKK rallies, you know, and she confessed the first time I did this, I was a little nervous, you know, as I'm looking through and I see they've got a cross and they've got the everything, but I gave my presentation and I was pleasantly surprised that I was invited to speak at 6 more events. They liked her message. The KKK was like, "We like what you're doing here, Margaret. Keep going." So she started Planned Parenthood. And she is a hero to the left. I think that's really about all you need to know, is that people like Hillary Clinton consider Margaret Sanger to be, you know, like she wants her to be the fifth face on Mount Rushmore. Really likes her. Liked, past tense, liked her. I mean, it's... But then again, are you surprised, really? Because Hillary Clinton's best friends are like Henry Kissinger and guys like that. Margaret Sanger was close friends with Ernst Rudin. Do you know who Ernst Rudin is? Well, considering I just mentioned Nazis, I mentioned Margaret Sanger, I mentioned the KKK, you could probably get a good idea that Ernst Rudin was a Nazi of the highest order. In fact, he was Hitler's director of genetic sterilization. Margaret Sanger was like best friends with this guy. Very close. They liked each other a whole lot. They had a lot in common. You know, with the murdering and the sterilization, you know, those things. You know who took over for Margaret Sanger? Bill Gates Sr. I'm sure it's all just a coincidence that Bill Gates's dad took over for Margaret Sanger. Hero of the left. All right, so after World War II, eugenics, the name, the idea of it, it went through a bit of a transformation. Maybe a metamorphosis is a better way to describe it. They kind of lost that eugenics name. It had, you know, you're coming off World War II where a bunch of people are being persecuted based on their ethnicity or their sexuality or their religion, things like that. It's a bad look, to put it mildly. And the concepts of eugenics, you know, flowed through the Nazi ideology, you know, the master race and the Aryan race and the good stock and the bad stock. I mean, it's just eugenics on steroids. It's eugenics on Pervasin, right? What was it? Is that the speed pills that the Nazi tank drivers used to take? So after World War II, eugenics transformed, and what they started to call it from that point on was human genetic engineering. So it's changed. It's changed because it got rebranded. It also changed because the science got better. And now it allows you to get into things like genomes. And it allows you to, you know, you don't have to measure heads and noses anymore. I mean, you can. But you'll look like you're a member of the Third Reich. But instead, they leave measuring of noses and heads and everything up to Instagram. No, I'm kidding. But I mean, kind of, you know. The forced institutionalization and the forced sterilization programs, those are still going on. I mean, those are still happening. But it's different now, because with the genetic engineering, you can now, you don't have to wait for that baby to be born with spina bifida or Down syndrome. And then you say, "Whoa, look, it's just a strain on society. We need to talk about you know, cleaning up the stock. We need to get rid of the people that are at the edges of society that are holding society down and, you know, all that insanity that they talk about. Now you can make the decision to terminate that pregnancy before it even gets off the ground. Let me rephrase that. You can terminate it during the pregnancy and before the baby is born and therefore actually becomes this alleged strain on society. Now, you talk to mothers that have babies with Down syndrome or babies with spina bifida, and you tell them, hey, wouldn't your life be easier if you didn't have that baby? And they'll kick you in the balls and scratch your eyes out. How dare you? They love those babies. They would say they would never want to live without their babies, that their babies are perfect to them, even in their imperfections and things like that. So it's a weird conversation. It's a weird idea. I understand the dilemma where it's, do I want to bring this baby into a world where this baby is going to have all of these like life is just going to be uphill from day one? And do I want to put this beautiful soul through all the excruciating pain that they're going to go through from their lifetime? I get that. I can understand that coming from a compassionate point of view, but that's not where these people are coming from. These people just see that as you're going to be a drain on the state. We don't want that, so get rid of it. But that's where we've gone with eugenics. It's evolved. The science has gotten better. And as a result of the science getting better, the propaganda has really sort of changed in the way in which they talk about how these projects are going to wind up working out. Everything is increasingly different. Well, I wouldn't say difficult, but it's just different now because the science has been, I don't know, I guess I'd say improving, but. I want to say, so Margaret Sanger is on the record. I put several quotes about her from her in the Octopus book, because like the things that she was saying are completely unhinged, but you got to read them or you have to hear them. And then, you know, for it to be real. And then you go, oh my God. So she would say things like eugenics is the most adequate and thorough avenue to the solution of racial, political, and social problems. You're like, I don't know about that. You have depopulation isn't limited to Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood. Politicians are deeply involved in the concept of eugenics. I mean, we know this because we know of these globalist organizations. They push depopulation in a very big way. Henry Kissinger, depopulation should be the highest priority of foreign policy towards the third world because the U.S. economy will require large and increasing amounts of minerals from abroad, especially from less developed countries. All right. So he's saying as a geopolitical strategic idea for America, it would be best if there were fewer people on the planet so that we can steal all their stuff. I mean, that's what he's about. How many dead Boy Scouts do you think are buried in Henry Kissinger's crawl space? There's got to be like a graveyard down there, I would imagine. Anyway, I don't know. Just speculating. But there's a psychopathy, though. That's the common thread that runs through all of this. It's a superiority complex that these people have. They think that, you know, nobody can do it quite like them, that they're the best. So when you get someone like Thomas Malthus, you might hear somebody referred to as being Malthusian. It's the derivation is from Thomas Malthus. He says, instead of recommending cleanliness to the poor, we should encourage contrary habits. In our towns, we should make the streets narrower, crowd more people into the houses, and court the return of the plague. Nice guy, huh? You know, and Sanger would say things like eugenic sterilization is an urgent need. We must prevent multiplication of this bad stock. She says the most this is a crazy quote. The most merciful thing that a large family does to one of its infant members is to kill it. Like, I'm sorry. What did you say? Like, Margaret Sanger didn't just get like fucked up at a party one night and start spouting all this stuff up. She talked about it openly. Like, she was into this. It was her thing. It was into her thing. And it takes a certain personality type, psychopathic, of course, to think these things, let alone say them. I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, we all have crazy thoughts from time to time. Like, you're waiting in line, you're stuck in traffic, and you're like, I wish all these people in front of me just decided to, you know, I wish all these people in front of me were never born, right? If some crazy shit like that, like, so I can get to my destination 5 minutes earlier or whatever. But like, the elite group, that group of individuals, they not only think like that, they then say it and then put policies into place that reflect their thinking. So you've got someone, you've got Hillary Clinton saying this. Now I have to tell you that it was a great, I'm not going to do her shitty voice, but now I have to tell you, it was a great privilege when I was told that I would receive this award. I admire Margaret Sanger enormously, her courage, her tenacity, her vision. And when I think about what she did all those years ago in Brooklyn, taking on archetypes, taking on attitudes and accusations flowing from all directions, I'm really in awe of her. Oh, Jesus. Hillary Clinton, president of the Margaret Sanger fan club, right on schedule. I mean, of course she's a big fan of hers. They're psychopathic, narcissistic tyrants, maniacs of the highest order. Of course Hillary Clinton thinks Margaret Sanger is great. She started Planned Parenthood, and everyone goes, "What? She's not racist for starting Planned Parenthood." No, you're right. She's not racist for starting Planned Parenthood. She's racist because she says things like, "We do not want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. Don't worry, you racist old bitch. We won't tell anyone." But so this is how they think. And it is, and so the depopulation component of this and the eugenics component of what we're experiencing with COVID actually fits very nicely. And I don't want to get too far into the COVID stuff because everybody's got COVID fatigue and nobody wants to talk about that stuff anymore. And I get it, but it's important for us to, recognize that mentality, the eugenics mentality, that some people are better than other people and some people deserve to live here and some people don't, and some, you know, we got to thin the herd and everything, that mentality is central to understanding the COVID operation. You've got to understand that, because when you start to see vaccines playing a role in COVID, and then you dig into the history of vaccines and you see how they've been used as a depopulation tool by the Gates Foundation and Gavi, then you go, wait a second. Maybe there's another component to this COVID thing that we're not being told, and that is a soft kill depopulation, maybe even a hard kill. But that's coming. So what about the new evangelists? What about the new eugenics task force that's shown up on the scene? Bill Gates and that crew, not just him. Who was super interested in this sort of science? Who was interested in evolutionary game theory and population structures and things like that? Anybody you recognize? Anybody with an island and a private jet who's co-conspirator was just under, Epstein. Real interested in this. Very good friends with Bill Gates too, by the way. I mean, they had a lot in common. They both want to they're both philanthropists, and by philanthropists, I mean full-on rapists. Okay, so let's talk about this. Let's talk about Bill Gates, and let's talk about his eugenics background or predisposition. Like I said, his father, Bill Gates Sr., took over for Margaret Sanger. Okay, so does that make Bill Gates Jr. a eugenicist? No, it doesn't. Not necessarily. But it is reasonable to make a connection that the same mentality that his father had could have been carried down to Bill Gates too. But to be fair, we don't always do what our parents tell us to do. We don't always follow in their footsteps. And sometimes we go the exact opposite way. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the Bill Gates that we know has the exact same values as his father, but they all have the same friends. Bill Gates Sr. is no longer with us, thank God. But there's pictures of Bill's dad with the same guys, Kissinger and Brzezinski and Rockefeller and all these guys. You know, so that they are in the same group. You've got, we've got to talk about his TED Talk, right? His 2010 TED Talk, where he talked about if we do a really good job with our reproduction programs and our vaccine campaigns, we ought to be able to get that number down by about 10 or 15%, meaning the total world's population. And so most of you have seen this TED Talk of his. It's only, or at least seen the clip where he's talking about this. Very simple question. If vaccines are so beneficial and helpful to humanity, and they improve people's health, shouldn't that number be going up, not down? Now, Bill Gates will tell you the reason why it's paradoxical, that the reason why the number goes down instead of up, is because when you give these kids vaccinations, they become healthier. And when you have a bunch of healthy kids, then you only need to have 3 kids instead of 7 or whatever. It's a bullshit cover story. It's depopulation. If we do a really good job with our vaccine program, we can reduce the world's population by 15%. That's 1 billion people. Where are the handcuffs for Bill Gates? Why isn't he being interrogated down at the police station for conspiracy to commit mass murder? I mean, he's openly talking about if we do a good job with our vaccination programs, we can lower the world's population by 1 billion people. And then his organization gets thrown out of India because their vaccines for polio were giving everybody polio. But 496,000 children now have polio from the polio vaccine. They said that wild polio in India almost doesn't even exist. It's like rare. The only cases of polio you find are tied to the vaccine. They killed thousands of people with other vaccines and then quietly paid them off at $1,000 per family because that was the maximum they had to pay. So, and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Gavi Foundation, Global Alliance for Vaccine Initiative, they've been thrown out of multiple countries. They're not allowed in, I think, the Philippines and Kenya and I'm not sure. India, I know. I think they bribed their way. I think they might be getting back into India, but fucking Indians don't want them there. They'll chase them. Yeah, you know what the Indians will do, right? They'll just go out there with sticks and meet them. If you've seen the videos of the vaccine teams arriving in Indian villages, they get the stick treatment. Fine with me. But to celebrate 100 years of eugenics in 2012, an event in London was hosted by UK's Department for International Development. Okay. Just kind of like on a bit of a side note, but when you hear departments that are called When you hear organizations like something called Department for International Development, be very suspicious of something like that. Because the international development is such a vague term that it usually means depopulating or it means something else. It doesn't mean, when you're talking about international development, you're like, oh, you're going to go help people in like Bangladesh? And they're like, kind of. Depends on what you mean by help. Help them get them off this planet, maybe. So this is the group, right? They have this, there's a party to celebrate 100 years of eugenics. It's a hell of a birthday party. And it's hosted by the UK's Department for International Development. And the attendees are Planned Parenthood, Maurice Stopes International, the UN Populations Fund, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I wonder what they are all talking about at their eugenics meeting. Probably talking about how Bill's dad did such a good job with Planned Parenthood, and they were probably talking about how their best friend, David Rockefeller, did such a good job with the United Nations. You know, out there uniting nations and all into a one-world government. But at this summit, or actually, I was actually at a different summit, but the same year, 2010, Bill Gates is up on stage talking about how cell phones are going to be integral in this, in being used to track vaccination uptake and status. 2010. He's talking about this. It's at a thing called the mHealth Summit. You can look it up. Look, this isn't accidental. I think we know that, you know, the COVID stuff. It's not haphazard. It's not random events. It's being made to happen. It's part of a much broader agenda. And the people that are involved in the COVID op are some of the same people in this Venn diagram of evil that are showing up in the depopulation op. So it is reasonable to connect those dots. In fact, it's unreasonable to not connect them. So in 2009, when you get a group together that's going to talk about population issues, and the people that are in that meeting are Bill Gates, Oprah Winfrey, Warren Buffett, Michael Bloomberg, Ted Turner, David Rockefeller, and George fucking Soros. Forgive me if I am a bit suspicious as to what these psychopaths are planning for us. They're going to discuss population issues, don't you know? Okay. Please define exactly what that means, because I don't trust these people, clearly. When they start talking about population control, I get very nervous. But it's not limited to them either. Because guys like Paul Ehrlich, he wrote a book called The Population Bomb in 1977. So this, again, this concept is not new. These people have a hard-on for killing people. They want the Earth depopulated so that they can live with their robot slaves and their child brides. And this is the world in which they want. So here's a quote from Paul Ehrlich from his insane book, The Population Bomb. The first task is population control at home. How do we go about it? Many of my colleagues feel that some sort of compulsory birth regulation would be necessary to achieve such control. One plan often mentioned involves the addition of temporary sterilants to water supplies or staple food or to the water supply. With limited distribution of antidote chemicals, perhaps by lottery, doses of the antidote would be carefully rationed by the government to produce the desired population size. Again, I'm assuming that Paul Ehrlich wasn't drinking Jägermeister all night long and then just whispered this to the guy taking a piss at the urinal next to him. I mean, that would be bad enough. That would get you crazy looks. But he wrote it in a book, and I presume he wanted people to read it. And he probably felt pretty proud of himself that he had come up with an idea that we would randomly sterilize everyone in this country by covertly adding sterilants to the water supply and then telling everybody, look what I've got. I've got the antidote. Who wants it? And then having a lottery system, which I'm sure Goldman Sachs would be in charge of, to determine who gets it, who's allowed to have babies. Why don't we do this? Why don't we have a lottery to see who gets to kick Paul Ehrlich in the nuts? You can put me in for, I'll buy 5 lottery tickets for that. It's so frustrating because I think the average person out there, good person, going about their lives, going to work, loves their family, deals with their job, but they need it. Just trying to make it, find the good things in life, minimize the bad things in life. They have no idea that any of this stuff is happening. Like this, if you were to explain this to them, they would think of you as being completely and utterly unhinged. But it's here. You know, you don't have to make it up. These guys are writing about this. These guys are talking about concepts. They're talking about mass murder and making it sound like they're talking about mass murder in a way that's trying to make it sound very sterile or almost as if they don't have a choice. Like they were like, I don't want to make these decisions, but these are the decisions that we have to make if we're going to survive and blah, blah, blah. And all, you know, it's like, no, you don't have to make any of these decisions. In fact, nobody asked you to make these decisions. Your decisions are no good. Paul Ehrlich, by the way, is a Stanford professor. He said this, a cancer is an uncontrollable multiplication of cells. The population explosion is an uncontrolled multiplication of people. We must shift our efforts from the treatment of the symptoms to cutting out the cancer. The operation will demand many apparently brutal and heartless decisions. Paul Ehrlich, everybody. If you sent your kids to Stanford, better hope they weren't in his class. They'll be plotting ways to murder you at Thanksgiving because you're taking up too much space on their planet or using too much carbon. But, you know, look, the United Nations, I think a lot of people, not our audience here, but I think a lot of people, again, in the general public, the people that are just head down, going to work, minding their own business, not paying attention, they think the United Nations is some altruistic organization that's going to come in and help to unite the world and be a force for good around the world. Couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, literally, could not be further. The United Nations is like maybe the Fourth Reich, if you combine them with the World Economic Forum. I mean, there's a lot of overlap there. Let me read you this. This is from the United Nations Eco 92 Earth Charter. The present vast overpopulation, now far beyond the world carrying capacity, cannot be answered by future reductions in the birth rate due to contraception, sterilization, and abortion, but must be met in the present by the reduction of numbers presently existing. This must be done by whatever means necessary. When you say numbers presently existing, what are those numbers of? Are they of people? So you're talking about the reduction of people that are currently existing and that must be done by whatever means necessary? And this is from the United Nations? Are you starting to get it? Are you starting to figure this out? The United Nations is not your friend. They don't want what's best for you. They're not looking to unite nations in a good way. They're looking to create a one world government, and they're looking to unite nations and in that way. But look, there's, you know, we've talked about academics before and how they get delusional. Not all of them, but some of them. When you get yourself in a situation where you've got tenure, which means you can't be fired. Anytime somebody says tenure, it makes me think of that Ricky Henderson quote from Ricky from the Oakland A's. Tenure, he's like, Ricky got 17-year, you know. You get these teachers, professors that can't lose their job. So their true self comes out. And we've got an example of this at the University of Texas, a guy named Eric Pianca, who is the evolutionary ecologist and a big time asshole. And he said the following thing: war and famine would not do. Instead, disease offered the most efficient and fastest way to kill the billions that must soon die if the population crisis is to be solved. AIDS is not an efficient killer because it is too slow. My favorite candidate for eliminating 90% of the world's population is airborne Ebola, because it is both highly lethal and it kills in days instead of years. We've got airborne diseases with 90% mortality in humans, killing humans. Think about that. You know, the bird flu's good too. For everyone who survives, he will have to bury 9. Get your kids out of the University of Texas. Get your kids out of Stanford. This is the shit that they're talking about. This is what these professors are lecturing kids about. I might need a safe space if I was in Eric Pianca's class. I'd be like, holy shit, this guy has lost his mind. You know, it's easy to be dismissive of the eugenics topic. It's easy to say, well, that just sounds too insane. You know, that sounds like something that wouldn't be real. I get it. I completely agree. It sounds insane. It sounds like something that shouldn't be real, but it is. And just because it's insane doesn't mean it isn't happening. And the one of the problems of this whole thing is that people are going to be in denial that a depopulation agenda is even talked about, let alone being put into place. And yet it is. It's happening right in front of our eyes. And that sort of stuff used to be sort of just what they were doing to Africans or what they were doing to people in India or you know, places like that, right? Poorer demographics. But that's not the case anymore. They don't care. It's on. They want everybody dead. If you're unwilling or unable to figure it out, they just figure, well, then you don't get to play in the next round. Now, of course, it's not their decision to make, or it shouldn't be their decision to make, but that doesn't matter anymore because they are making that decision. It is in our best interest to be aware of it. You don't have to agree with it, obviously. But the days of pretending like this is just some conspiracy theory that old Bill Cooper's talking about and that'll never happen. Look, it has happened. It is currently happening, and it might happen more than likely in the future because there's something wrong with these people. There's something broken inside their brains, something that has gone terribly wrong that makes them think that they are the ones that are in charge of who lives and who dies on their planet. It's narcissism to a level that is really difficult to wrap your head around. But I'll tell you what, the first step like anything, the first step in getting past this is recognizing that we have a problem and we've got a problem. So it doesn't do us any good to try to pretend or minimize or hope that maybe this isn't it. Maybe they're not really going to do this. Maybe this is all just theoretical and they're just talking about it or role playing it or, you know. No. These guys are working towards this. And I might add, they now know that we know that they're working towards it. So now they're sort of being exposed a little bit. I don't suspect that that exposure is going to make them stop. In fact, I think it's going to make them ramp it up faster. Because the way they have to look at this is that it's either us or them. Because the minute humanity realizes that what they're up to, then all this shit stops. If you like this show, if you are interested in connecting with me, you can do so through the website, The Octopus of Global Control, and take the additional step right now of sharing this show with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter @macroaggressions, and I will talk to you all soon.